You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in beautiful, sunny Cocoa, Florida. Just a magnificent day today. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web, www.1510wwbc. You can hit that Listen Live button. Get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, the shows are also archived there under the On Demand button. And, of course, we are on each and every Monday from 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 2 p.m. You can find us under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then, of course, on all of our social medias, it's under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and Sita Media Inc. That's S-E-E-T-A, MediaInc.com.
Yeah, I'm beginning to like my name.
It's a gorgeous name.
It is.
So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we have an action-packed segment today. We've got our good friend Aaron is calling in. Aaron, you got to help me with his name there, Miss Ellen. Oh. Aaron Boslin.
Yeah, Boslin.
Boslin. Yeah. There's a little dash in the middle. Mm-hmm. And he is one of the I want to say he's like the CEO of Men's for Choice. Mm-hmm. He's calling in to talk about why men support a woman's right to choose. That's our first segment. And our second segment is with my friend, Andrea Fant. And Andrea is an attorney who's been working here at the Public Defender's Office for over 5 years. And she's running now she's a candidate for Circuit Court Judge. Ellen, I am really, really excited about her candidacy, and she's going to be on the second segment.
That's right. And her segment is being paid by the group to elect, sponsored by the committee to elect Andrea Fant for Circuit Judge. I have to get that right.
18th judicial
right.
circuit.
I know.
Yeah.
I have to get
Anyways,
these right.
Before Aaron gets on the phone, let's tell our listeners a little bit about our show. Our show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, is a fun, exciting, very informative program that we put on here every Monday from 1 to 2. We are heard worldwide. Ellen O'Neill is my right hand. She does all the back things, get the website going, get everybody their segments and their MPs, sends out the invoices. Without Ellen O'Neill, I could not have Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We could not be on air for 14 years.
And we, because of the expansive reach that you have on Facebook and the other social medias, we usually get anywhere from 15 to 18,000 downloads a week.
Praise the Lord for that, right?
Amen.
Thank you, Danny Whiting, for running our board. And then we have our good friend, Ali Tamber, who comes in every Monday religiously and sits here with Ellen and I, and we talk about stuff. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
They brought a friend today. Nancy is here. And then we have Farrington, the beautiful Andrea Fant, who's going to be on second segment. But our show here, for those who are just tuning in today, we speak to people right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak to people in our state, nationwide and around the world, whether you want to save the whales, whether you want to help the environment, women's rights, running for office. Maybe you're an author and you want to talk to us about why you wrote a book and your story. We speak to people from all walks of life. We know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we play nice. That's why we've been on air for 14 years, right? And so today is no different. We've got a good friend of mine. His name is Aaron Boslin. I don't know why he has a hyphen like me. I have Cedar Durgin Isma Begin. I have a hyphen. Homeland Security has a really tough time with my passport. So Aaron is on the phone. He is an award-winning educator, a results-focused community organizer, and a public servant. He currently serves as the Deputy Executive Director for Men for Choice. How wonderful is that? That men are actually looking out for a woman's body, mind, and spirit. I think it's great.
You're here.
Right? So, Aaron, talk to us a little bit about yourself and your education and the all the activities you're doing, and bring us up to speed about Men's for Choice.
Thank you very much, Sita. Always nice to talk with someone else with the hyphen in the name, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I actually, just the other day, I was at a conference in Atlanta last weekend, and the initial tag was misprinted. They fixed it, but that hyphen, you know, as you know, that hyphen gets in the way sometimes, but it's part of who we are. Yeah, my name is Aaron Boslin. I'm from Miami, Florida. I've lived here since 2012, and I'm the Deputy Executive Director of Men for Choice, where, like Sita said, we think it's essential for pro-choice men to not be passive, not just sort of look at what's happening as women's rights are taken away, as there are efforts to restrict the ability for people to control their own bodies, but for men to stand up and to step up and to speak up on behalf of women and to stand with everyone who can get pregnant. And so we train young men through a fellowship program, spend 10 weeks learning about the issues, and then we mobilize them to step up for actions, whether that's at rallies or, you know, making calls at election time to support pro-choice women, so that all of us who believe that everyone should have the right to control their own body are taking action and not just thinking it's someone else's issue if it doesn't affect your body personally.
Right. And, you know, in life, everything comes down to education, right? So once you educate people, they know what choices to make. And we've always said that, you know, we have to promote comprehensive sex education as well as academic, trade, military, whatever people want to do with their lives. Why do you feel like Men for Choice decided that, you know, there's so many groups out there, there's Planned Parenthood and there's National Organization for Women and all those other groups, but you all decided that you were going to stand out and say Men for Choice? Who came up with the idea and how did this get started?
Yeah, the idea came about a decade ago. We were started in 2015, and our founder was sitting in a session through New Leaders Council, actually, which is the conference that I just came back from in Atlanta, where I was receiving a national award for mentorship in our fellowship program. And our founder was sitting in the session in 2014, and he was listening to a speaker talk about efforts to restrict women's rights in 2014 at the state level. And he realized, as a man, he had never thought about these things. He thought that Roe v. Wade was settled law and that that was just something that was set. It wasn't something he thought about as a guy. In the same way that unless you, you know, happen to be a person who uses a wheelchair, you probably don't think about if buildings have, you know, ramps for easy access, for example. And he was sort of shaken by this because he thought he was someone who was trying to do the best he could for the community and to help people out and so forth. And he started talking with some other male friends and realized that a lot of them, you know, philosophically were pro-choice. They believed that women should have the rights to control their own body. But no one really, you know, saw an on-ramp to engage, or they thought of it as a women's issue and it's not appropriate for me to touch it as a man. And so they started to organize their male peers and figure out how they could help. And then over the last 10 years, it's evolved where we find all kinds of guys, and in particular, since Roe v. Wade was overturned, that a lot of guys look at what's happening and think that this is just wrong. But they also haven't necessarily ever thought about this very much. I mean, I know personally, me, I got an email at the end of 2019, and Men for Choice, which had started in Chicago and expanded through Illinois, was now going to expand nationally. And I had a moment kind of like our founder, Oren, did 10 years ago, where I'm looking at this email and it says Men for Choice expanding into Florida and expanding nationally. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I've been a public school teacher and I've been involved in unions and in LGBT advocacy and doing everything I can to try to make the community a better place. And I can't remember the last time that I even, you know, thought about this issue because guys just don't think about it. And so that became the central thing is how do you get guys to step up, not as the leaders of this movement, but to support the leaders of this movement. Because like you said, Planned Parenthood and so many organizations locally, nationally, have been doing this work for generations. But if you go to any, you know, rally, if you go to any Planned Parenthood event, you'll see that very few men are showing up. So
we appreciate you guys. I mean, yeah. Us ladies in the studio, we appreciate you because the state of reproductive freedom in the state of Florida right now is downright scary. And yes. And if people have daughters, if they have nieces, if they have, you know, a wife, a sister who are of childbearing age, they ought to be paying attention to what's going on. Because personally, I don't know if I told you this before, but I have 18, we are 18 brothers and sisters. I have 17 siblings.
Wow.
And it was a very difficult life with lack of resources for my parents. And honestly, I do believe in a woman's right to choose, because I feel like pregnancy is something that no woman should have to have a man telling them what to do and what to do, not to do about their own body. And I saw my mother, and I saw other people in where I was born in the Caribbean, in Trinidad and Tobago, and I do believe in a woman's right to choose. So talk to our listeners here in Viewpoint with Seton and Friends about the state of Florida and reproductive freedom. A lot of people feel like our freedoms, a lot of freedoms are going to be denied pretty soon.
Yeah, it's dire. And let me tell you a story from a friend of mine who's actually speaking to our Men for Choice Fellowship program, our young guys tonight. His name is Derek Cook. And a few years ago, he and his wife were on the cusp of achieving their dream of becoming parents together. They live in Margate, Florida. And his wife, Anya, had a miscarriage at 16 weeks. And at the time, this was just after Florida had put a 15-week abortion ban in place. And I want everyone to think about what that means, especially if you're a guy, because a lot of times we kick around these numbers and 15 weeks seems reasonable. Oh, it seems like you have a lot of time. Well, she had a miscarriage at 16 weeks and she went to the hospital and they wouldn't deny her entrance into the hospital because they said they could be investigated by the state. They could be criminally prosecuted. The doctors could lose their license, potentially face jail time. Because they could be believed to have performed a quote-unquote illegal abortion. And so she had to leave. She went home. And the next day she lost nearly half the blood in her body in a public bathroom because she wasn't allowed admission to the hospital for medical care. That was under a 15-week ban. When she had that complication, that heartbreaking complication at 16 weeks, where she's already going to lose the child she hoped to have and then nearly lost her own life because doctors were not allowed to provide medical care under Florida's 15-week ban. We're now at a 6-week ban. For those of us who are men, we probably have spent very little time thinking about pregnancy or the reality of pregnancy. Most women don't learn they're pregnant until around that time. The average time for a woman to learn she's pregnant is somewhere around 5.5 weeks. And so most women don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks, let alone have the time to make a decision with themselves, their partners, whoever else they consult, as they're deciding what to do with their lives and the creation of their own families and what they want to do with their own bodies.
Right. And,
so
you know, and, it's, and you know, Aaron,
a total man.
And, you know, Aaron, a lot of women, some people miss a menstrual cycle and they don't think anything of it. I know from as a woman, right? Allie's shaking her head. Go ahead, Allie.
Certainly that happens. You know, maybe you've lost a lot of weight or some other medical issue is happening and missing a period. It was almost... Most of the time, you want to go gay, you know. You know, at least you got a little freedom there for a few weeks. But you know, if you don't pay any attention to it, and it is a pregnancy, holy moly!
Yeah. So
that's right.
So you know, the thing is, a lot of women all over the United States are paying attention to what's going on politically in our nation, and at this point in time, having a child is a responsibility. It's a financial, emotional, mental, physical responsibility, not just for people who vote Democrat or people who vote Republican. It's a human issue. So people are looking at this all over the states and they're saying, wait a minute, even if I don't believe in abortion, it is not my business to take that right away from another person. Like my mother used to say, you don't know how another person's pot is boiling. You don't know what's going on in their home. You're not going to show up when the woman leaves the hospital to say, hey, I'm going to babysit for you. I'm going to give you money for your rent. I'm going to help you with your health insurance. I'm going to help you with a car. You're not there to help this woman and this whoever got her pregnant. So why are you interfering in her right to choose? I don't understand. And I think a lot of women and a lot of young girls who are listening and paying attention to you, and I said, this seems to be an issue for them in this election coming up. So talk to our listeners about why is it so important for women to have that right to choose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think a second important point to make along those lines, like what you were saying, Sita, is that not only is this something that primarily affects women, it is the men who are banning abortion across the United States, who are leading the charge to ban abortion throughout the United States. Last year in state legislatures across the country, there were about 1,600 votes to ban or criminalize abortion in some way, including here in Florida. 86% of those votes by state legislators were taken by men. And so why is it that men who have never been pregnant, who will never be pregnant, who know nothing about pregnancy, what you were saying earlier about, and the panel were saying about menstrual cycles, they don't know any of this. In what world are they qualified to pass laws about women's bodies? And it raises a question, that you just posed about, what does it mean for a state to go after this particular medical procedure in this way? And it's really scary, because if the government has the ability to control women's decisions in this way, and if you're a man in a heterosexual relationship, in what world are you better off if someone like Ron DeSantis or the men in the state legislature or whoever else it might be on a national level, potentially with this talk about national abortion bans, in what world are you better off if male legislators have more say in what happens in that hospital room than you and your partner? Is that really where we want to be?
I don't think so at all. Well, you know what? It's almost like we're going to have to lock up our wombs and hide them because people are coming after them, Ellen.
Well, and then the other side of it is, too, is that you have insurance companies that are denying, in some cases, denying that benefit of even reproductive prevention, right? So that you can't even get help to decide that you don't want to have children. You have to, you know, like the birth control pill, for instance. I've been denied 3 or 4 times on different, now doesn't affect me anymore, but nonetheless, when I was younger, my insurance company didn't cover it. So, I mean, even those kinds of things are, it's much broader than just a decision, you know, of that decision, you get pregnant and it's an abortion. It's what about the whole structure?
Yes.
Well, the preventative side of it, the whole process. And once again, it goes back to the same thing. It's kind of a right for all of us, isn't it? That we should be able to do,
control
have our
bodies.
Intimate and have our intimate decisions made intimately, not exactly. Involving the government
That's right.
at all.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, and I really appreciate what you said just there, because I think about my own experiences, right? I became a homeowner 2 years ago, right? And I have to deal with city permits and all those things for the first time in my life. And whenever government gets involved in things, it makes things more complicated. And that's when it comes to, you know, whatever it might be, owning a car, owning a home. How in the world are we better off if the government is getting involved in the minutia of people's medical decisions? How is anyone better off? It's a really bizarre thing. And it raises the question of why are these men so committed to regulating and banning something they know nothing about?
Right. And you know what's weird, too? If a man had to give birth through his private part, like the woman do, and have to have stretch marks and an episiotomy, and they had to have, you know, constipation and hemorrhoids, and they had to vomit for a few months, men would be saying, wait a second, we don't want to get pregnant.
That's right.
But it's not their body.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I'm a nurse, so of course these terms come to me naturally. But I have had a lot of patients who would say, nurse, I got this hemorrhoid with my first kid. You know, so here's the thing. You're bearing down. You care. It should be your choice what is in your body, mind, and spirit. That man is not pushing out that baby or having a C-section with a huge mark. I mean, I have nothing against people who want to get pregnant, but it should be a choice. And it should, and that person,
right,
it should be a choice. So here's the thing. Where have the Democrats or political party affiliations or human beings in general, how did we lose that message about pregnancy and who should get pregnant and having a choice? And how did it get so bad that men in suits, three-piece suits, sitting behind closed doors are making decisions for everybody?
And just to add one more thing, I really thought like the ACLU would be doing a much better job with
they're
this.
They're trying, though.
They're really trying.
Everyone
I know
is
they're
trying,
trying,
but these men in these suits, who have money. The men in suits have a lot of money behind them. The only thing they're missing is a headpiece, because some of them act like they're from the Middle East. I know we went to war for democracy. We went to war in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, all these places for democracy, and it looks like women are going to lose their rights. What is the difference with how people in this country act at times and people in other countries that keep a woman in the kitchen and pregnant? Are we really going backwards? I mean, that's how a lot of people are feeling.
Yeah, I think the good news is that majority of people don't want that. It's a radical minority who are trying to move us in that direction. And you ask the question of how we got here. Well, I think there's a couple things. And one of them is that for a long time, a lot of women have been leading on this issue. It's a unique issue in that if you look at anything else, you know, I know you're very concerned with the environment, Sita. If you look at the environment, if you look at insurance regulation, pick any issue, you will not find that half of the people who hold that issue are silent, inactive, and don't know how to engage. That is the situation when it comes to reproductive freedom, because nearly half the people in the country who are pro-choice are men, and almost none of them are involved. They're not donating. They're not showing up. They're not standing behind and listening to women, whether those are women on the front lines working in hospitals or whether those are leaders of organizations. And so for about, 50 years, I think the average pro-choice guy in America has just sort of thought that Roe v. Wade was settled law, didn't think much about abortion rights, didn't find it important. And this is a big failure on the part of men. To stand behind and take seriously the women who said this was a right that could be taken away, that there were men who wanted to take this right away. The question is, how do we change that headed forward? Because what we do at Men for Choice is we focus on, in our organizing and our educational programs, making sure that we're training a generation of men who aren't going to fail the way that men have over the last few generations, that we are going to show up, that we're going to listen to women, that we're going to stand behind women. And there's a lot of great work happening right now. You mentioned the ACLU. They're currently in litigation with the state of Florida because the state of Florida fears that Amendment 4 is going to pass, as it should. It has majority support, and they're worried they can't beat it. They're worried that 60% or more of Floridians are going to vote yes on Amendment 4 to restore reproductive freedom. And so they're trying to tamper with it. They're trying to cheat. There's a financial budget committee that is trying to put a disclaimer on the ballot initiative that when people vote, it claims this will harm the state's economy. That is not factually true. It's just to give people doubt and to make it confusing.
Well, it's fear.
Well,
it's a lot of fear tactics. You know, we've seen that.
A lot of fear tactics.
Right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Aaron Barcelon. He's an award-winning educator and a community organizer and a public servant, and he's also the deputy director of Men for Choice. So we have like 4 minutes left of the segment, and I want to ask you a question. How do you answer people that are so ignorant at times, and they say, well, I don't want women using abortion as a birth control, which I don't know anybody that actually used abortion as birth control, because that is such a personal decision, such a difficult decision for a woman to make between her partner, her God, herself, her doctor. You know, that's a difficult decision. So how do you answer the people that says, we don't want that used as birth control? I mean, there's got to be a way to say, wait a minute, if you educate people, this is not going to happen.
Right. I mean, I think there's a lot of anti-abortion stigma that's been the result of a lot of careful organizing, a lot of money put in by groups over the last 50 years to try to roll back reproductive freedom with the stated goal of overturning Roe v. Wade, which they eventually did. And so we live in a landscape now where a lot of those stigmas persist. There's a lot of misinformation around abortion, not by accident, but by design. And so for one, there are just the facts of abortion. For example, 59% of people who get abortions, 59% of women who get abortions are already parents. And the most commonly cited reason for getting an abortion is to be able to care economically for the children they already have, the family they already have. But more importantly, if we're having a conversation and it's based on the sort of, fantasy that the anti-choice extremists like to paint, that there's some sort of abortion bonanza happening at 8 months and 3 weeks of pregnancy. The reality of it is to think about what it means to ban and criminalize abortion. It means that women like Anya Cook are bleeding out in public bathrooms in the state of Florida because men in the Florida legislature decided they know better than doctors when to provide medical care. It means risk to so much else. Where does this end? Is it contraception? Is it IVF? Where is this lust for power from people who don't know anything about women's bodies, trying to pass laws about women's bodies, going to end? Only 3% of abortions happen in the third trimester, and they're overwhelmingly due to medical complications. And yet, if you listen to the anti-choice crowd, you would think that every abortion in the United States is happening at 8 months and 3 weeks, and it just isn't true. I think it's on all of us to recognize that we have no right to tell anyone else what to do with their own body, while also recognizing that the majority of people realize this. That's why everywhere abortion's been on the ballot, it's won. The majority are with us, and we need to push back in our daily lives, whether that's at the kitchen table or at the bars or on social media or every place we can, to let people know that banning abortion is cruel, banning abortion causes harm, and banning abortion is not about life, it is about control.
Right, power and control. Well, with the remaining a few minutes we have, if somebody wanted to get involved with Men for Choice, give us your website. I know you're always seeking donations and volunteers, so give us your website for all listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can go to menforchoice.org. That's with a four, so menforchoice.org. You can shoot me an email at aaron@menforchoice.org is my personal email. And if you want to be involved in any number of ways, we'll plug you in. We're going to be very active through Men for Choice advocacy in helping pass Amendment 4, mobilizing men to support all of the leaders who are already working to pass Amendment 4. And if you're listening to this and anything I said speaks to you and you said maybe I could do a little more, shoot us a message and we'll plug you in and we're going to stand together behind the women and longtime leaders for reproductive freedom and make sure that we pass Amendment 4 to correct the out-of-control state legislature.
Right. And one of the things you guys are working on, too, you're trying to elect more LGBTQ people to the state legislature as well, throughout the country as well?
That isn't an explicit priority of Men for Choice. Men for Choice is exclusively focused on advancing the cause of reproductive freedom. That said, when it comes to attacks on reproductive freedom, if you look at any place where abortion is being banned, they're also going after LGBTQ rights. So these things relate, but we're singularly focused on supporting pro-choice candidates and causes.
Yes, and I'm glad you cleared that up as well so that people will know exactly we do have men in our corner fighting for us.
That's right, and we will make sure we get all of this information and the websites and the Facebook pages all shared with our listeners out there. We're going to take a brief minute. Aaron, thank you so much for sharing all that great knowledge today. We're going to take a brief minute here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages with Andrea Fant.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. Our first segment was awesome.
Yes.
We have a great second segment planned, Miss Ellen.
We do. And if you'd like
Andrea
to listen.
Andrea Fant.
Andrea Fant.
Andrea Fant. Right. And I said it correctly.
Exactly right.
How do you like that?
But
Andrea
if you want to listen live, you can go to 1510 WWBC and hit that listen live button. And you'll get us on any one of your listening devices. Of course, after the show, we have all sorts of MP3s available for people to download, which we have a lot of downloads these days, like 15 to 18,000 downloads a week, which is awesome.
So,
yes. And I do want to point out to all of our listeners that this segment is sponsored by the candidacy to elect Andrea Fant for circuit judge for Brevard and Seminole counties, which Seminole County is over in Orlando. And I'll let Andrea tell us all about that.
That's
when she
right.
gets on her side.
Well, you know what's nice about Andrea is that she's a Floridian.
That's right.
And that got Danny very excited because
yeah.
he is a Floridian as well. Some people
and
like.
So is Allie.
Yep. And so is Allie. People don't like transplants sometimes. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for Circuit County Judge. Is it 18?
18.
Judicial Circuit number
yes.
18.
Yes. So thanks for having me. Yes, my name is Andrea Fant. I'm running for circuit court judge in our 18th Judicial Circuit. That includes all of Brevard and all of Seminole County. So if you reside in either, I will be on your August ballot. I have to keep telling people that because they think it's a November election. It's not. The election is on August 20th, and early voting is on August 10th through the 17th.
Yeah, and you know, it's very important that people make a plan to vote. Because you can early vote, vote by mail, or you can go in person. And a lot of folks don't understand the importance of August 20th. So tell our listeners, Andrea, about August 20th.
Yes, so that's the election day. And as you mentioned, people are receiving their mail-in ballots. Military have already received theirs, and individuals are receiving theirs both in Brevard and Seminole. I've already received several emails, text messages, direct messages on social media of people saying that they've already cast their vote for me. So I appreciate that for all those who have already voted for me. Thank you. For those who plan to vote for me and will vote for me, thank you in advance. But just to give you some information and background on me, I was born and raised in Melbourne. I've been an attorney for over 14 years. Throughout my career, I have gained civil, family, criminal experience. For family, you're talking about divorces, child custody matters, child support, civil. I've done injunctions and landlord-tenant matters. And for the past 5 years of my career, I've been an assistant public defender. And what motivated me to run is I was going into the courtroom every day, as I do now, protecting my clients' constitutional rights, advocating for them as I should, but feeling that the system as a whole wasn't getting better. And I was getting increasingly frustrated with the vicious cycle that I felt that we had created in our judicial system. And so one of the areas that is of concerning for me is how we deal with drug addiction in our judicial system. So many of my clients suffer from drug addiction, and I was tired of just seeing them recycled in and out of prison as opposed to getting the treatment that they needed to help address the underlying issue. And so I have to give a little disclaimer, right? As a judge, I wouldn't be able to create a rule across the board that everyone who comes before me who is a drug addict will seek treatment as opposed to incarceration. But what I want to see is that we use those resources more often than we do where the circumstances and the law provide, as opposed to defaulting to prison. I believe that ultimately we don't make the system better if we are just putting those people in and out of prison, in and out of prison, in and out of prison, as opposed to treating the underlying issue. So where the circumstances and the law will allow, I want us to start using those resources more as opposed to prison or incarceration.
Yes, a revolving door is what you're saying. And you,
right.
And you get, I would assume that you got tired seeing the same people over and over again for the same. So it means that somewhere we failed them.
We do. And I think even when we do allow them to go to treatment, it's as if we've created this culture in our system that if they relapse one time, then that's it, incarceration. I don't know how many times I've heard someone say, oh, well, we already gave them one chance before. We're not giving them another chance. When we know that relapse is a part of recovery, it is inevitable that people who are drug addicts will relapse at some point in their life. And they should at least be given more than one opportunity to overcome what is considered a disease. So I just feel like we should do more.
So focus on addiction and diseases of that sort.
Right. Yes. I want to see us improve the system in that respect and also improve how we address mental illness. I mean, so much of the crime that we experience in our county, in our circuit, deals with addiction. You know, when people are drug addicts, how do they get their drugs? Well, at that point, they've probably lost everything they have. They have no property. They have no family. Everyone's alienated. They've stolen and lied to everyone. So then how do they get drugs? They steal. So then that's your, you know, burglary, breaking into your home, grand theft, stealing your vehicle, stealing petty theft, stealing everything to get drugs. And now we're just creating more victims. And again, it's this vicious cycle. And we can address it better if we address the underlying issue of addiction.
For listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, that calm, rational voice you're hearing is no other than Andrea Fant, and she's running for circuit court right here in our 18th Judicial Circuit, which includes Brevard and Seminole counties. And she aims to improve our system of justice, and she has the experience to do it, and she's proven it before. So judges are supposed to be responsible for ensuring that the legal system works and that it's fair and impartial. Once elected to the 18th Circuit, what is your understanding of the role of a judge?
So, yes, we are supposed to be fair. We are supposed to, as a judge, I would take an oath to protect, defend, and support the Constitution, both the Constitution of the United States as well as the Constitution of Florida. And that is what judges need to do. They need to make sure that they're following the law, which I know that I will do. As a judge, I believe that I would be fair, that I would be able to take the circumstances that are before me, apply the law, and in a criminal division, my sentence would fit the crime that was committed. And I do want to touch on that a little bit. I do not say this in any way to disparage my opponent, but I am the only one in this race that has criminal law experience. I am the only one in this race that has jury trial experience. And that is important because at the circuit level, which as an assistant public defender, I am assigned to a circuit division. On that level, we are not talking about your low-level cases, your low-level petty thefts or trespasses. If you have some type of case like that or some type of charge like that, it's because it is in conjunction with a felony. At the circuit level, we are talking felonies. We're talking homicide, murder, sexual battery, burglary, drug trafficking, charges that can send someone to prison for their natural life. On one end, you have someone fighting for their life. On the other side, you have a victim that has been harmed or even killed. So it is important, in my opinion, and what I would submit to the listeners, that you have a judge who has experience in those areas, and I do, and I'm the only one in this particular race that has that experience.
Right, and only if you have the experience can you be fair.
Exactly.
And impartial when rendering a decision. So a lot of our listeners who tune into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, they always ask this question. If you could tell us the difference between a circuit court and a county court, because a lot of people don't know the difference, and yeah. We have to vote. August 20th is going to be here before we know it. And leading up to that point, we want people to cast their vote for Andrea Fant.
Right. It's jurisdictional. So when you're talking about county court, and off the top of my head, I don't know what the limits are and the amounts. But say, for instance, if you're talking about a civil case or a landlord-tenant case, at the county level, you're dealing with amounts that are lower. At the circuit level, you're dealing with amounts that are higher. Right. And so at the county level, you're dealing with misdemeanors in a criminal division. At the circuit level, you're dealing with felonies. So circuit levels are higher. They deal with a lot more of egregious crimes, a lot more serious
crimes.
That's
why you need somebody experienced to lead, like Andrea Fant.
Right. You're talking divorces, child custody, those type of cases on circuit level. Also, for circuit, it includes both of the counties within our circuit jurisdictionally. So it includes Brevard and Seminole, whereas for county court, it would only be Brevard residents that are voting.
Right. And how would you ensure that all parties involved in a case is treated fairly in a respectful manner?
Right. So I think that you just listen to both sides. You allow both sides to listen. And one of my biggest frustrations, and if elected, I will not tolerate, because I think it causes a lot of confusion, is when you have parties or even attorneys. We even have attorneys that do it where we're talking over each other, we're interrupting. Someone says three words, and then the other side wants to just react to the three words. Let the person complete their arguments so that, number one, you give that person the respect that they deserve to be heard. But number two, you have a clear record, because especially in a criminal division, it's all being recorded. So you want to have a clear record in case there's any appealable issues or someone needs to request the digital recording because they want to file some type of a motion. It's important to have a clear record. And so that's one of the things that I would make sure in my courtroom, that we give each other the respect to be heard. We listen to both sides. We eliminate everyone talking over and interrupting each other. And so that I can make a fair decision after hearing all of the viewpoints.
Right. And the challenges that judges face, I'm sure there's many challenges. Have you seen, you've been working in the court system for a long time, have you seen a lot of challenges?
So the number one challenge that a lot of people see, you don't even have to be a lawyer, is the dockets. It is controlling the docket size. For me, I manage a docket now. I think my number is at 136. I've been as high as in the 190s on a circuit level dealing with felony cases. The dockets get ridiculous. And trying to manage that, it takes a lot of organization. And I know, so for instance, I was past president of an organization, the local chapter of FACDL, which stands for Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. And last year, I had this vision to have a true roundtable event where we gathered defense attorneys, prosecutors, judges together to discuss the inefficiencies in our criminal system. And the consensus amongst the lawyers is one of the things that causes backlog, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that causes backlog is that in a criminal division, we're in court nearly every day. So we have little time to actually work our cases. So now with every agency having body cam and dash cam, we as the attorney, we have to watch all those hours of footage. We need to do case law research. We need to draft the motions. We need to meet with clients. Prosecutors need to meet with victims. And there's little to no time to do that when you're in court nearly every day. So as attorneys, we were encouraging the judges, give us some office time. Give us time to actually do our work so that when we come to court, we don't need to ask for another continuance because we're not prepared to go forward because we haven't done all these other things that we need time to do.
And I would think you can't have an assistant watch those tapes because you are the one being called on the carpet if something goes wrong, right?
Right. I watch the body cam footage. I watch the dash cam footage because I am looking for issues. Do I have a motion to suppress issue? Was my client provided Miranda warnings? And it's not just that simple. There are so many different nuances of the law. So even when you're talking about Miranda warnings, there are certain times when Miranda needs to be given. So you're watching to make sure all these things are being addressed. So as the attorney, I'm obligated to watch that body cam and dash cam footage. It's not something that I can push off on someone else.
That's right. Yeah, oh my goodness, I could imagine. And what do you think are the greatest qualities of a judge? Because we all talk about a judge being fair and respectful and listening to both sides, but there's other qualities that we want to see in a judge.
Right. So I think the word that I use is conviction. And by that, I mean that judges are put in the spotlight, right? So much of what they do is subject to scrutiny by the public. I believe judges need to be able to have the conviction and the principled, like, be able to stand firm on the law and not be swayed by public opinion or peer review, right? So I believe that you have to constantly stand on the law, and even when there might be some backlash to what you are doing, you have to have the conviction to be able to say, well, this is what's right, this is the law, regardless of how you may view it, I stand on this. And that takes courage.
Right. And it is critical that a judge remain impartial while presiding over a case, right? What strategies would you have to remain impartial?
I believe that actually would be easy. I do have the ability to look at both sides. I think this is misconception that if you are a defense attorney, then your transition to the bench is going to be more difficult than if you were a prosecutor. And I just don't believe that. I think that as a defense attorney, I would be able to be impartial, look at both sides equally, and be able to ascertain what's happening and then make my decision. So I think that's something that I would do very well.
How do you plan to stay informed about changes in the law and judicial precedents? Because, I mean, you guys, just like nurses have to do continuing education, I am assuming that attorneys and judges will have to do the same thing.
So as attorneys, we do have to do CLEs, and we have to report them every 3 years. And right now, I believe in my general credit hours, I'm well over. So that is something that judges, I don't know per se if they have CLE, but I do know that judges do things like they go to judges college to help with their transition into becoming a judge. And so I would stay on the law. Also, you oftentimes, when you're in court and you have motions before you, you have both the prosecutor and the defense presenting you with case law. And so it's the judge's job to read that case law and then make a decision based off of what they have.
Right. So, Andrea, you strike me as the kind of person that your foundation with your mom, when I read your bio, your mom was a bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are, you went to Palm Bay High, you went to law school, you are a community advisor to so many things, you're involved in a lot, you volunteer in a lot of organizations. You're so involved. What has motivated you to become such a stellar human being? Is it your mom? Is it because we talk about what happens in the courts, and judges and attorneys see a lot of stuff that goes on, and we all come back to the foundation of the family. Everything starts in that home when you're born, right? But look at you. Was it your mom? What propelled you?
I think it takes a village, right? So. My mom, yes, my sister's 5 years older than me. My sister's in the military. She's in the Army. And my mom would look to her to care for me as well, to help. My dad passed away when I was very young, so it was my mom and my older sister. But also, I have to give a lot of credit to the pastor that I had. He's no longer with us, but he was so instrumental in my upbringing and bringing me to the person that I am now. That's why I think it's a village. It was a lot of different people pouring into me all of these little things that I carry with me now that's made me the person that I am today. And I think it's a lot of drive. I have a lot of drive and a lot of passion. I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old when I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. And I was asking my mom to take me to court to go shadow lawyers because I just wanted to go to court. And I didn't even really know fully what that meant at the time. I just knew that lawyers went to court, and I wanted to go to court. So it was a drive in me to give this career and give the law everything that I have. And I think it is my purpose in life, and I pursue it.
And we can tell because you're so passionate about it. You also volunteered with Habitat for Humanity. And you also tutor to help children. Talk a little bit about the volunteerism that you do. And you're quite motivating, I have to say. I could just see you as a little girl being 6 years old. And your mom says, you can't ride on this bus. This is my job. And you say, well, I'm going to be a lawyer one day. I want to ride on this bus and check how you treat these kids.
So, yes, I've done, and the community service that you're mentioning, I think I did that when I was in college, but I've continued my volunteerism. I've volunteered with Reefs Across America. That's something near and dear. For those who don't know, you put reefs on the graves of those servicemen and women who've fallen around the holidays. We do that. And I've also volunteered with a local restoration nonprofit organization along the same lines. They wanted to restore honor to those servicemen and women who passed away, but their grave sites have been neglected. And so they actually go through and restore those grave sites so that they can restore honor to those veterans. And I've volunteered with that as well for many years. I have volunteered with the Daily Bread, serving and helping to provide food for the less fortunate.
The
Children's Hunger Project. Last year, I organized a volunteer event where we went there and packed meals for the kids who need meals over the weekends, because that's what the Hunger Project does. They provide meals to those kids who are less fortunate. So many children rely on breakfast and lunch at school, but the issue is that when they leave school on Friday, what will they have for the weekend? And so the Children's Hunger Project steps in to provide them with meal packs to get them through the weekend. And they have a lot of volunteering opportunities for you to come in and pack those meals for the kids. So we did that as well.
So for listeners who are tuning in, that voice that you're hearing with all these volunteering opportunities that she's taken and done is that of Andrea Fant. And she is running for circuit. She's a candidate, I should say, for circuit court judge in our 18th Judicial Circuit in Brevard and Seminole counties, and she aims to improve the system of justice, and she has the experience to do it. And I'll just let her tell our listeners really quick your current position so they know the experience that you have to lead.
Yes. So, again, I'm currently an assistant public defender and have been for a little over 5 years now. And I believe that that will help me because it gives me experience, unlike my opponent, to bring to a circuit bench. And so at the circuit level, as I mentioned, you are addressing issues that are a lot more egregious in a criminal sector and a lot more serious, even in family and civil. You're dealing with issues that are more serious. And I have experience in all of that. And that's what I bring to the bench, along with my leadership skills. I was president of FACDL this past year. My vision, my drive, my education, my knowledge about the law.
Endorsements? Do you have any endorsements?
I do. So I've been endorsed by Blaise Tredis, who is our elected public defender, Tim Thomas and Mark Russo, who are both Melbourne City Councilmen, Jerry Demings, who's the Orange County Mayor, and as well as Alex Goins, who is one of the city councilmen in COCO.
So don't forget, the election day is August 20th for this particular race for Andrea Fant. And I just want to remind everybody, too, that in some states, the governor actually is the one that appoints the circuit judges. But here in the state of Florida, it's an elected position. It's a nonpartisan election as well, too. So just keep in mind that you're not voting for a side. You're voting for justice.
You're voting for fairness.
Exactly.
And making
sure that you're checking out the League of Women Voters, which has all of the great information about each and every candidate that's running, so that way you can get not only a history, but you can certainly get links to their website and information of how to contact them to, you know, ask questions or anything like that. So, and once again, this segment has been paid for by the approved by the committee to elect Andrea Fant for 18th Judicial Circuit County Judge Group 7.
And this is the fun part of the show when you have to pretend you just met us in an elevator, elevator that's working.
That's right.
Because I've been stuck in elevators in Mexico that doesn't work, and the Radisson in Miami. And say you want to tell us that you're running for office. Give us your elevator speech. Why someone should vote for Andrea Fant for Circuit Court Judicial District 18 versus someone else.
Yes. So, a judge can be either appointed or elected. The position that I'm going for will be on your August ballot up for election. I'm asking for your vote because I am more experienced in this particular race than my opponent. I have the criminal law experience, the civil, the family. I have been in leadership positions. I am aiming to improve the system. I'm doing it with a mission. This was not something that I did because simply it was on my bucket list or the next stage or progression in my career. I did it specifically with a mission to improve what I was seeing every day. And I have the drive and the experience to do it. I'm running on fairness. I believe that I will be the judge that is fair to look at all sides and be able to make the determination that I need by applying the law to the specific circumstances before me. So I'm asking for your vote because I'm aiming to improve the system. I have the experience, and I will be your fair judge.
Yeah, and folks, if you're coming to the courthouse, make sure you dress properly. Even if you have to borrow a jacket, you go to a courthouse sometime. It is a place of respect, fairness. You know, I think people should respect what the judges do, the lawyers do, respect our clerk of courts. I mean, we can't say enough about what you all do, and we're grateful for it. I mean, Rachel Sadoff has been on our show before, and we absolutely love her, and she's done a fantastic job. And I want to tell you, because of you, I had a lot of my friends look at their mail-in ballot that they just got for the August 20th primary, and I said, do not put that aside. Get it done. And people are voting for you. And we really appreciate everything you've done.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just want to leave
your website.
With my
give us
website.
Your website.
For
yes.
more information, AndreaFantForJudge.com.
And we'll make sure we post all of that on our social medias as well. Thanks again for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Make sure you tune in to SitaMediaInc.com for all these great interviews that we've had. We'll see you next week here on 1510 WWBC.